Happy Wednesday, live from the Skyline Studios, high above Columbus and Wacker Drive, on a chilly Chicago day, right?
It is, but the sun's out.
Felt it this morning when you first walked out there, that blast of cold air. This is Anna DeVlantis, but Santa is going to leave the long underwear at home, it seems like, gee, because look at Tom Skilling's forecast. I got it right here in front of me.
Okay.
Christmas Eve, high of 46. Low of 34, but, you know, still warm. And then Sunday, Monday, nearly 50 degrees, so warmer than usual.
Wow.
Chicago.
I wonder what that will mean for people. Does that mean they'll go do an outdoor activity with their family?
Yeah, maybe people will be more apt to do some outdoor, even grill a turkey or something like that.
Oh, yes. I do love a fried turkey, though.
A lot of options there for you, and it certainly won't be bitter cold. So that's nice part about it, is people are getting around, getting where they need to go. All right, I want everyone to weigh in on a topic here, a very sensitive topic this time of year. We're going to get to that. First, though, I want to tell you about something coming up on the show today. Did you see this? We were talking about it earlier, G. You might be buying trash, literally trash, when you shop on Amazon. There's some in-depth reporting about these people who go dumpster diving, and then they clean up the goods, make them look new. Now, either it's behind the retail stores, or it's maybe it's just even in dumpsters, regular old dumpsters. Things that they find, they collect, that they think they can package up or, you know, clean them up enough that they can sell them on Amazon. And they're doing it and making a lot of money doing it. The Wall Street Journal actually set up a store, their own store on Amazon, where they went dumpster diving. They cleaned the stuff up. They resold it. And they saw what happened.
Anna DeVlantis, say it ain't so, because that is something I expect on eBay. I do not expect that on Amazon.
It's not what you expect. I also want to ask this reporter, because she went really in-depth on this. Are those things then marked as new or used? Because I think that makes a difference to me as a buyer. So we want to talk about that. There's also this third-party seller. Mm-hmm. This is a different category, and I think it's pretty different. And there's including this one woman in Illinois they profiled, who's turned it into her family business to shop thrift stores, wholesalers, discount stores, and then resell it at a higher margin. So there's that going on as well. Now, that doesn't seem as bad to me.
No.
But the dumpster thing is obviously the issue here. So she talks about what quality control is in place at Amazon. And how you even know?
It's like when I buy cheese or an avocado, I want to know where it came from. Did this come from Mexico? Is it organic? Is it regular? Did this come from a local farm?
It is interesting.
If something came from a dumpster, I want to know it came from a dumpster.
Well, that's the interesting piece of it. What is the quality there in place? We're going to talk to her about that. But here's what I want to get into now, guys. Okay, listen to this. Are you a re-gifter? Do you re-gift?
With a caveat, I do. I re-gift, and the way I re-gift is that I just say, hi, I'm giving this to you. It was given to me. Take it, enjoy it. It doesn't work for me, but I hope you run with it, love it, enjoy it. And if you don't like it, you can give it to someone else.
Lauren, are you listening to this? Do you re-gift? Or let me ask it another way. Let me ask another question. Are you offended when you get a gift that you're pretty sure has been re-gifted? Sometimes you can tell.
I silently will be offended, but at the same time, you never know someone's situation in terms of financially or if they're just going through a tough time, so I try not to judge. I have re-gifted, but usually only if I haven't opened it or used it or anything like that.
Well, it is a great way to save money. It declutters. It's eco-friendly. There are a ton of arguments for it. I think, personally, I'm not offended at all, unless it's something that feels like it is definitely for someone else.
Right.
That totally is not for me.
If it's a bottle of alcohol that's half gone, now we have a problem.
But chocolates I'm fine with, as long as it's not opened and eaten. If you've got chocolates and you have too many chocolates, that's okay. Give me the box of chocolates.
It truly is the thought behind the gift that counts. And if this is a gift that you haven't opened or used, and the thought behind the gift is, wow, this will work perfectly for my friend, and I know that my friend will love this gift, give it to them. I tend to always, you know, put the little disclaimer that, by the way, someone gave this to me and I'm giving this to you.
You will tell them.
Yes, because I just feel so guilty, but then I'll add a little smaller gift to it.
Well, this is interesting because there's some psychology behind this. The people, when asked when they were re-gifters, what they associate with re-gifting, they did use words like guilty, lazy, thoughtless, when describing feelings about themselves when they re-gift, but actually the people who receive them don't feel that way, as long as the gift is something that, yeah, they feel like there's something for them
absolutely.
That they enjoy.
I mean, if you have been gifted too many bottles of champagne because you're hosting Christmas, as you are, Anna, and you decide that you want to give me a bottle of champagne because you have extra.
Share the love.
I am all about it.
Can't have enough champagne or a bottle of wine. I mean, people do that all the time, don't they? You just rip the gift tag off and you say, okay, here's a bottle of wine for somebody.
Absolutely.
Bring it to a party, especially hostess gifts.
You have to have a lot of those.
Yeah. I guess there are some people who would be offended. I think the only area where I've seen that people would be offended is if it's clearly, you know, just something that is, you know, some guy's into golf and he gives you a golf themed item, but you're not into golf.
Or if you gave me a bracelet that was personalized that said Anna on it, then I would know.
It would be
Anna,
a major, major tip off there. There are rules to regifting. So they talk about how you have to keep track of it. Because if you're a big regifter, mm-hmm. you really got to keep track of who's got who and who.
Yeah, you don't want to give back something that someone gave you.
Oh my God.
People have been caught by that, by the way. There are repeat offenders of regifting that have been caught.
You ever caught anybody doing that?
Not to me, but I have had friends that do that.
And they get mad about it, right? They're like, wait a minute.
And part of it is once you know so many people, it's a lot of people to buy gifts for. So I just say, stop trying to buy gifts for everybody. This season is not about buying gifts. That's not what this is about.
It's a great reminder, and I think that's right. And I think there's nothing wrong with regifting. It's just you do have to keep track of it because you don't want to give it back to the same person who gave it to you or someone who knows that person who then tells them, hey, guess what G got me? That could be pretty awkward, I would think. Pretty awkward. So, and then you just think it through as the other rule of regifting, just to make sure the person would really enjoy it, right? Okay, whatever. Here's a bottle of wine.
The thoughtfulness behind it. Yes. As long as the person is going to love it, that's the thought behind the gift.
Yeah, here's a 6-pack of beer. Mm-hmm. You know, the guy, they like beer. It's fine. That's okay. That's a gift. So it's interesting. And then the other thing is check the condition, make sure that all the chocolates are in the box before you re-give it, right? You got to make sure that's going on.
Not melted.
Not melted.
I have gotten melted chocolates before.
Oh, no. Have you?
Yeah. Oh, honestly, it wasn't
their
fault.
But maybe it wasn't a re-gift.
It was delivered to me because I was living out of state, and I opened them, and they were all melted to the top of the box.
But I bet you still ate them, right?
I did, actually.
I knew it.
They were so good, I couldn't pass up.
Who can pass up some good chocolates? I mean, that's the thing. I just feel as if it's very common, and it's actually tomorrow's National Regifting Day. So it's a day when we celebrate regifting.
Well, what are the white, is it the white elephant or what?
Right, yeah.
Party? Yeah, those parties. That's what
white elephant, you're supposed to regift.
Yes, so just throw that party.
Those are always fun, aren't
right.
they? I find that the hardest class of gifts is just the $10 to $20 or the $5 to $10. Or, you know, when they put caps on things for different...
Impossible.
It's impossible.
Everybody ends up giving everyone a $20 Dunkin' Donuts or Starbucks gift card.
Right, because otherwise you say, here's a $5 gift card. I guess that's good, right? You can get yourself a coffee.
Part of a
maybe,
coffee.
Maybe, almost. If you get one of the cheaper versions of the coffees there. But I think that's the hardest. So regifting classics, the champagne, the bottles of wine, the chocolates, the gift cards.
I know something that you can buy for $5 that's always useful.
What's that?
It's chapstick.
Oh,
because
man,
we all need chapstick. And it doesn't matter whether you're a guy, a girl, whatever. Everyone needs chapstick because it's so cold.
Chapstick?
Yeah.
Everyone always loses it, too. Mm-hmm. It's like a big accomplishment to actually go through a whole chapstick.
Steve, you wouldn't like to get the chapstick?
I haven't used chapstick in 20 years.
What?
Wow.
I'm jealous.
Wow.
What would we get you for $5,
You're moisturized.
Steve?
I just probably don't pay attention. For $5?
Yeah. Anything?
No. Maybe an eraser.
Eraser. Here's an eraser?
Right. The two-sided eraser? Sure. I'll go for an eraser.
818, I got a used candle once.
Ooh.
Already used. Someone's
pretty bad.
Lit the candle.
Ooh.
It was, they could tell it was used.
That's horrible.
It's not good. But you can't really clean that up.
But what do you do once you do get that gift? Do you write that person off of your friend list?
Do you mention it? Then it gets even more awkward sometimes. All right, we got a break here, guys. Coming up, Sam Walder. He's this Chicago guy turned entrepreneur who took out his frustrations about learning a musical instrument and formed a business out of that frustration. It's a pretty cool story coming up here on WGN. All right, the violin music is the subject of Our next guest and what he has to say, it's super cool. Sam Walder is his name, Chicago guy turned entrepreneur. You had some frustrations playing the violin when you were young, and so you turned it into this really cool business. Tra-la, is that what it's called?
Tra-la.
Tra-la, like tra-la-la, that's where you got it from. Tell us what it is.
So Tra-la is software that can teach you how to play the violin from scratch. We have tutorials from famous violinists, and we've got technology that listens to you play your real violin, gives you instant feedback on everything you do. So if you're a violinist today or somebody looking to learn, you basically have two options. You could pay $80 an hour to your standard post-Soviet psychologically abusive private teacher who's available on Tuesday at 4 p.m.
You put a lot of loaded words into that.
Or you could use Tra-la.
Well, there are some very good teachers, right, instructors and music teachers. But obviously, it sounds like you had a frustrating experience growing up, because I read some of the background about what brought you to create this. It wasn't a great experience for you all the time. You started when you were four.
Yeah. I mean, most people who learn a classical instrument go through this at some point. There's millions of people who pick up an instrument, and about 95% of them quit. And I believe you're actually one of those.
I did. I used to play the violin, and I did quit. For mm-hmm. me, it was more because it got to a point where it didn't seem cool anymore. And I know that sounds like the wrong reason to do it now. But at the time, it just felt, I don't know. And there's so much work in trying to keep your skills going that it became like, I got other things I want to do.
Absolutely. That's so true. And that's why the people who are teaching on Tra-la are, they've got diverse styles, they're motivating. So, for example, we've got Katie Jacoby, who is the electric violinist for The Who. And when she was 12 years old, she discovered Black Sabbath, right? And she didn't want to play that classical music anymore, but she kept playing with the violin. And so she's showing people how they can take new interests and put that into different styles.
I think that's the other piece of it, too, is it becomes not fun. It becomes work for a lot of kids. Practice your piano. Practice your violin. Pick up your... You haven't picked it up in days. It becomes like work, or you're just dreading it at some point. And maybe sometimes the music is also not so relatable. As you point out, I had a Russian immigrant as my teacher, I remember, and all the music was in Russian. I couldn't even read the names of the music, and I didn't really, it was not that relatable, to be honest.
Yeah, it's got to all be about the music. I mean, just, why are we doing this? Why are you playing music? Mm-hmm. It's for the beauty, it's for the joy, it's for happiness.
So you have this app, Tra-la, and you say that people can learn it easier, faster, and it's less stressful, is the word I saw there.
Absolutely. We have people using this for 3 to 4 hours a day. It's really high quality. You've got the tutorial videos. And the really cool part is the technology, because oftentimes learning an instrument, you don't really know if you're doing the right thing or the wrong thing. So we actually tell you that. It listens to you play your instrument, gives you the feedback, so you can see, okay, my finger's in the wrong spot, or I'm off rhythm. But then again, you know, it all comes back to the music. So we make sure that we're teaching really good songs from really extraordinary violinists. And, you know, we're seeing the results. We've taught about 150,000 people so far. We've got 10,000 people a month who are coming in.
10,000 a month.
Mm-hmm.
And when did you launch this app?
About 2 years ago.
Wow. Wow. How old are you, Sam?
25.
You're 25. Wow, so you did this when you were 22, and you just sort of took off. Did you realize at the time, hey, this was something, I've got something here that people would really like to learn this way? Or were you just, I mean, what happened? What was the impetus there?
You know, you look at the world, and you see that there could be so much more music in the world. That, again, most people quit an instrument, and almost everybody, especially in the United States, we go through this incredible education system with music education, and it's just wasted.
Yeah,
it's really wasted, and I thought that was a shame. So I knew there was something big here, and I know that people want to play. So my goal, I'm just working in service of music, and everybody at Tra-la is doing that. We're just trying to get more people playing.
I saw the quote, we don't care if you sound amazing, but it's that you're having fun playing. And that's a big piece of it. We were talking earlier about that. Like, you feel as if you're having fun as a kid, or at any age, really. If you're enjoying it, then you're going to want to keep doing it, and it isn't always enjoyable when you're preparing for the next lesson. How do you guys make it fun?
The violin teachers, first and foremost, if you go into the Tra-la app and you look at the videos, I mean, we've got some really extraordinary people. Katie, I talked about, we've got Rob Landis, who is this YouTube superstar with 2 million subscribers, and he's all about video game music and making really cool music videos. And so he's talking about finding your own style there and just, you know, he dresses up funny and tries to make things really fun. We've got some more serious styles as well for the people who really want to dive into classical. Dr. Nune Malik is one of the most exciting classical violinists on the scene today. And when she was 19, she was the top student at the Moscow Conservatory, came to Montreal, threw out everything that she'd ever learned and said, I'm going to start again.
Were these all people you looked up to?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, cool, these are musical heroes of mine. And so I'm really happy that anybody can take lessons from them now.
All right. So in Trala, you actually make the promise, if you've never picked up a violin before, and even if you have no musical experience, we can have you learning a song in minutes. Now, I played the violin. It's very hard to even get going, just to learn how to hold the bow, how to learn hold the instrument, just to get going. But yeah, that's quite a promise to make.
And it's absolutely true. I mean, we see it thousands of times a month. We have, I mean, this comes down to the instructors. Just extraordinary work from people who are passionate about the instrument. If you follow the instructions, then you're going to be just fine. And we see people who've been using this for a year, 2 years, playing beautifully.
Really? What kind of feedback do you hear? Do you get to interact with people who are actually using the app, or is it one of those things you just don't?
No, I sent an interview request to every single person who uses the app. So yesterday, my morning, I was FaceTiming with a student in South Africa. He's been using it for 2 hours a day for 4 months. He's keeping it a secret from his family to surprise them that he's learned the violin.
How cool is that?
Making great progress. I just was responding to an email from a user in Syria about 30 minutes ago. Who was in military service for the last 2 years and finally just got back to the app and decided to give me a note and say, hey, I'm back at it.
You're one of the stars of the tech world here in Chicago. I know you've gotten some coverage in Cranes and other places. Did you feel the tech community in Chicago was helpful for somebody like you with a big idea? And I don't know how much funding you had coming into the game.
Incredibly helpful. I mean, people here are so supportive, and it's wonderful to be part of that community, to give back where I can, but I think I take a lot. I'm definitely a leech on the community, and I spend hours a week in mentor sessions making sure that we're doing the right thing.
You still play the violin. Do you pick it up every day now? Or are you more of a business guy? I mean, what's happening for you now? Are you playing as much
every
as
day,
you used
every
to?
Every day. And there's nine of us at Trala, and we're playing music in the office every single day.
Oh, my gosh. What was that period of time when you sort of got the frustration and did you fall off and stop playing for a while?
Every single day.
Every day? Were you complaining at your parents? Like, why do I have to do it? Were you one of those? Like, oh, my gosh, you're going to make me do this kind of thing? Were they forcing you? And the lessons are so expensive. That's the other issue. This is, how much does it cost to use Trala?
$20 a month or $120 a year. Actually, right now, we just launched a bundle deal for people who are just interested in learning the violin, maybe picking it up, maybe Christmas or New Year's. We've created the most accessible way to learn, and we work with a violin shop in the United States, which can ship anywhere. You can get a year of lessons on Trala and a brand new violin made in the United States by real violin makers, mm-hmm. starting at $265. Mm. So under $300 for a year's worth of violin learning. And I believe this is the most accessible learning opportunity for violin in history.
It's really, I mean, it's just remarkable what you've done. I suppose another question would be, obviously there could be other instruments here. It's not your instrument, but do you think that you'll personally be branching out and offering flute and oboe and all those other instruments, trumpet?
Yeah, I mean, we care about music. It's all about the music. And music should not be limited to one style. It should not be limited to one instrument.
Yeah. It's fascinating because you think of how many people like you. There's got to be so many. And do you hear that all the time? People who gave it up because it wasn't fun or they were feeling pressure to do it. And do you hear that?
I heard it from you today.
It was totally my story. I wish I'd loved it. You know, the other thing that I would say is, personally, it was hard to then pick up the violin later when I tried to appreciate the investment my parents made and the investment I made in practicing for so long and then giving it up. As an adult, I then tried to pick it up And it was so difficult. It was because you don't want to play Twinkle Twinkle Little Star when you're, you know, 29 or older. And you don't want to, you know, play those little simple things. But nothing, I couldn't play anything else. Do you have people also on the site or do you coming back to the instrument?
See, this is one of the big problems with classical music education is that there's this idea that the entire goal is to play a more complicated piece, that you got to get to the Paganini Caprice or the Mendelssohn Concerto. And that is just dumb. I mean, play something beautiful. Please, just have a good time. The songs that we're teaching, I mean, I love to play them. The very first song that we have people play is the blues, and that's a canvas for emotion.
Interesting.
Right? It's about how are you feeling today, and how can you put that, just if you're playing a single note, you can play something beautiful. And so, yes, there's a lot of guilt for people coming back because they think it's some sort of competition. But, I mean, I would just... For anybody who's listening, who used to play any instrument, I would just encourage you, it does not matter mm-hmm. what you're playing. You don't need to play the most difficult thing. I would
just
also not
fun.
Play Twinkle Twinkle because I think that's a terrible song.
Yeah, I do. Well,
so
it
we
also,
don't teach
it can
that.
Sound awful too, as I've proven over and over again on the violin. Sam Walder, thank you so much. The app is called Trala. He's a tech entrepreneur here in Chicago kid who just started this Trala, and it might be something you want to check out. More to come here on WGN, including Rick Kogan is here with a book about Clark Street, a look back at the old neighborhood, coming up. Back live here on WGN. One of my favorite people is stepping into the studio, Rick Kogan, longtime Chicago Tribune journalist, respected journalist, one of my journalism heroes, in fact, host of After Hours here on WGN, along with someone I'm meeting for the first time, hello, Tom Palazzolo. He's stepping into the studio. Really is. Here, let me get you guys' mics up as you're sitting down here in the studio. Good to see you both.
You too, sweetie. You
this
too.
This is an amazing...
And congratulations on this new...
Thank you.
...venture, as they call it.
Thank you, Rick. I think that's a good way to put it. And I really... I read the article you did on this book, full disclosure, and that's what made me think, hey, this is a really cool thing that Tom has done. It's called Clark Street, very simply...
Yeah, and very simply.
Very simply. But the pictures and the stories of life in the 60s and beyond and what it looked like then and how it's transformed over time, this, what is it, 8-block stretch of Clark Street, roughly River and Chicago Avenue?
Yes. I think it's about 8 or maybe 7. I keep recounting it. And,
when it's changed so much, I'm surprised they haven't turned it into one big block of... you know, chic places. Anybody who sees that stretch now,
yeah,
Anna,
wouldn't recognize it.
Wouldn't believe it.
Yeah.
I don't think. Do you agree, Tom? You go back there.
I just was back there, and right. There's maybe two storefronts. I think one storefront.
It's Which ones are they? Because I just drove it the other day trying to think, hey, what here is, remains?
Uh-huh. There's a blues club, I think about 500 block.
Yeah.
And that's actually where that woman, it was a diner back in the 60s now.
So, because that's what you spotlight. You spotlight how it used to be panhandlers and peddlers and transient hotels, taverns, saloons even, uh-huh. kind of some seedier places and adult bookstores, things like that. And you moved there at the time.
I guess early on there were no adult bookstores.
That came later.
Bailey kept everything.
He did. He kept a tight rein on that stuff.
I think then after 68, they struck down the censorship laws.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you start to see peep shows and stuff all over there.
You moved there. You were a young student at the Art Institute, and you roomed with two other guys. That's where young students would live because it was cheap, right?
Very cheap, right? and actually, it wasn't zoned, but this is Chicago, and
yes.
and uh-huh. the landlord knew the alderman, and even though my bed was right there, they would come up and they'd say everything's okay. I don't know if he slipped them any money or not, but I got away with staying there, even though it wasn't.
Let's go back a little bit because it was made into a movie as well. And
Indeed.
And you got to watch that. You just call, it's called, what is the movie?
Down Clark Street.
Down Clark Street. And you can find it where. We're going to play a piece of it here, but I just want to make sure people know where.
If they go to Media Burn. I think it's an archive in Chicago. Great archive.
It's super cool. It's just the back in the day thing. Let's hear this little piece of it we have here, some audio for you.
I took this photo looking south on State Street back in 1960, the year I arrived in Chicago. You can see the core of Marina City, then under construction in the background. I just moved here from St. Louis to study at the School of the Art Institute. To me, Chicago seemed like an ideal mix of old and new.
And you talk about basically the places that had a past and a story to tell from back in the day.
All right. Yeah. I grew up in St. Louis. I'm here. It's easier. I grew up in St. Louis, and it's not as interesting a city. St. Louis didn't have an L, which was an underground, and not as many interesting buildings either.
One of the things, if I can interrupt for a second, Tom, one of the things about you and the way you have always explored Chicago is you have been drawn not to the glittering skyscrapers of this town, but to kind of life, if I can say it, sort of under the L tracks. And that's kind of, there's no L on Clark Street. That's what intrigued you about those places and these people, right?
It sure, yes, very much. You know, so places like Riverview, which was an old amusement park,
Right next to Lane Tech High School, where I went. Yeah,
that's right. Mm-hmm. Oh, you went to Lane. Well, you
must have Lane Go.
And I'm old enough to have gone to Riverview.
I guess it closed in '67.
'67.
But it was great.
I think the thing that would strike most people, and the reason why this book really is interesting to me, to see the characters of days gone by and what it used to look like, and the contrast between this area that goes right up to the river along Clark Street. Basically, you can touch the loop, and yet it was so segmented along that river that it was like rich and poor and working man and sort of like the banking types and all of those, and just such a contrast that you don't see today at all. You got to get further out into the neighborhoods to see real people and that kind of thing. And this is what that was about. Uh-huh. This is what you chronicle.
Yeah.
Well, how did you? I mean, you're such a self-effacing guy, Tom Palazzolo. That's why you've had entrees.
Naturally, no.
It does seem to come naturally. And there were certain places on Clark Street that you wouldn't go into, right? Say your friends.
Right. There were a few, you know, there was a movie theater called The Strand that showed exploitation films then. And I'd rather go to the Clark Theater, which was a great theater.
24 hours. In the loop, by the way.
Really?
In the loop.
Block
from City Hall. A block from City Hall on Clark Street, the Clark
Theater.
Where many people would go to. That's where people went to sleep all day, too.
Yeah. All right. And women could be somewhat safe. There was a place called the Little Gallery. It was upstairs. It was
a protected kind of
I like also you spotlight individual characters. And your photography is, you went to the Art Institute. It's just phenomenal. You have Clara the Pigeon Lady. You have the political flyer guy who had a little dog and a station wagon, and he'd hand out political flyers or something.
That's in the video. Hey, I wonder what happened to that poor guy. Right.
Well, you have to think. I mean, the stories that you tell in the book, and as I said in the story in the Tribune, this one story, and you, in the self-effacing Tom Palazzolo way, you say, I'm not a writer. There is a story, one-page story in the book about a woman named Carol Ann that is heartbreaking.
Yeah.
It is like a brilliant Chekhov or John Cheever short story. How did you become friendly with her?
How did you get to know all these people?
I noticed her in the neighborhood and that she was, you know, had
infirm
problems.
Yeah.
You're right. She was infirm. And she would sit in this, in this all-night diner all night. And I walked in and talked to her a little bit, although she had trouble speaking.
Hmm.
She did. There was a friend. I guess I call him Joe in the book.
You do.
Who took care of her. He felt sorry for her. He was a good Samaritan to her.
Yeah.
And I talked to her, and a hymn, and I asked if I could get her anything, and he said, yeah, she would like a carton of cigarettes. I got her a carton of cigarettes, and she would smoke them down to her fingers.
Wow.
I don't want to get too graphic.
Yeah,
here,
it's a pretty graphic picture, but you can feel that there's something going on with her, that she's, you know.
I guess it was something like ALS that she had.
Rick, what struck you? Because I love reading everything you write. But then when you wrote about this, I know you're a lifelong Chicagoan, and you like to write about slice of life issues and things like that, things that inspire, you know, they remind us of the past here and that kind of thing. If there's something special about this book and this movie.
Well, I think, and I hate to sound like some kind of Luddite, but in this era where people are communicating mostly with tweets, they don't go out as much as they used to, they don't see life and street life in the way they once did. And this city is rich with that past. So it's not so much nostalgic. I just think it's important to remember. I mean, your dad owned a tavern.
He did on Clark Street, not in this stretch, kind of farther away over Rogers Park, Clark and Devon. But it very much reminded me of what you spotlighted there, too. And that's probably my connection
also,
to
one
it.
Thing. Tom and I were talking before the show. There were once 7,000 liquor licenses in this town.
Right.
Meaning everything from the pump room to the neighborhood tavern. There are now about 1,000. And I think in many neighborhoods, what's vanished from Chicago is the neighborhood tavern where people would gather. You know, you talked about things in a neighborhood tavern that you certainly couldn't talk to in church.
No question about that. And I think you're right. Even more importantly, we kind of live in silos now. You're with people who think like you and, you know, like you in so many ways that you're not going to that spot where you're interacting.
And that's the great thing about Tom's book about Clark Street. Many of these people are, you know, on their last legs, so to speak, Tom. They don't have any money. They live in really, really crummy apartments, as you and your buddies probably did, too. But at least people talk to each other.
Right.
You know what I mean?
It's a fascinating thing, and I encourage people to buy it, look at it, take a look at these pictures. You can stare at some of these pictures for a long time because that's the remarkable thing about you and your work, Tom, is they tell such a story. And, you know, just a piece of Chicago history. So,
went
Tom.
To go to mediaburn.org. And
you Tom, must. You got
Tom
to.
Tom has won a million awards, everything but an Academy Award for his video work. And there's a Riverview piece on there. There's a number of. You could spend this weekend, ladies and gentlemen, with a Tom Palazzolo Film Festival.
Why not? He needs to be recognized. Thank you, Tom, so much for coming by and sharing it with us. And Rick Hogan, always good to see you, too.
And always great to talk about cool things.
It is. One more thing, Tom?
Oh, yes, one more thing. I want to thank Rick for that article.
He's the best.
They thank me on the air.
Yeah, he's the best. We know that.
And everybody, my friends like it, and not only did I give them a book, but then they say, I really like the book. Can I have four more to send to my friends?
Yeah. You
That's Tom Palazzolo, the businessman.
Go to Amazon, tell him. All right, thanks, Tom. Thanks, Rick. Thank more to come here on WGN. Very quickly, Rick Hogan is still here in studio, and there's one more book before we get to our next topic here that I wanted to ask you about, because you're writing about the crimes that inspired the movie Chicago, you and several other authors.
It's me, Michael Phillips, Chris Jones, but the remarkable thing is Marianne Mather and Corey Finley, two women in the photo staff, are imbued with Chicago history, and the material they found, I'm a small part of this, so is Michael and so is Chris. The bulk of this book is telling the stories of, you know, women traditionally do not go out murdering people. That's a man's thing. That is a man's thing. But
generally
in Chicago,
speaking,
in a time, there was a section of the county jail that housed a number of female killers. It was called Murderous Row, which is a great name. And on that Murderous Row, one of the women had inspired the play and then the movie Chicago. And it also talks about Maureen Watkins, who was there weren't many female reporters in those days, and she's the one who covered that case. And Murderous Row, it's available, I think, now. It'll be more available after the first of the year, thereby ruining everybody's Christmas, not to give your grandmother
might be a Valentine's
book.
Day gift,
hey,
right?
Grandma, hey, here's a book, Murderous Row. But it's fascinating, and Corey and Marianne have put together. It's an incredible kind of visual archive that is in that book with, you know, idiots like me, Michael Phillips and Chris Jones putting our two cents.
Well, you're
in
one
there.
Of my favorites, so thank you, Rick, and thanks for.
And it's always great to see you.
You too.
Merry
thank
Christmas
you.
And all that.
Merry
jazz.
Christmas and all that jazz. Let's get over to that other story we were talking about earlier about how you might be buying trash on Amazon that people are literally going dumpster diving and then cleaning stuff up and putting it on Amazon. It's an interesting and very in-depth report by the Wall Street Journal front page today. Khadija Safter is one of the reporters on this. And Khadija, tell me about what it is you guys went about doing. I mean, it's just, I think it's remarkable just the headline alone, but you went pretty deep on this in order to figure out what people were doing in terms of salvaging things literally out of dumpsters.
Yeah, so we found sellers who said they were able to offer items from the trash as new on Amazon with a Prime logo. So we wanted to test the process as well as Amazon's screening process. So we went dumpster diving behind stores like Michael's and Trader Joe's and found items that were unopened. And we wanted to see if we could sell it on Amazon. And it turned out to be pretty easy. We were able to sell multiple items, including a jar of sealed lemon curd from the Trader Joe's dumpster.
Had it been opened at all? It was totally sealed. Everything looked new about it. You just had to sort of clean it up?
So some of the items that we found from the dumpsters, they were blemished. I mean, there's like food waste and what you would expect to see in a dumpster, and the stench was awful in a lot of the dumpsters. So what we were told by the dumpster divers is that they do clean them up, and some go to pretty extreme lengths to do that. They'll shrink wrap items. We just wiped down the items we found, and they looked like they could pass as new. Mm-hmm. So what we did was we used the FBA program, and we shipped the item to an Amazon warehouse, and we waited for them to be listed because we just wanted to see whether, you know, there would be some way to just to give them an opportunity to see, like, whether anyone at the warehouse would flag it or not. And then the minute it was listed, we obviously bought the item right back because we didn't want anyone to end up with items from the garbage.
That's how you got around it. I was wondering about that piece of it. You were just trying to see how the whole process worked. And it also shines a light, I think, on Amazon's ability to control third-party sellers, quality control issues, and things like that. What did you learn about that?
So at the time when we did this experiment, Amazon didn't have a policy explicitly prohibiting the sale of trash, but they did add that language after we emailed them last month, and they said, quote, these are isolated instances and they would investigate this matter, and they would increase spot checks of source documentation. But we found that when we were listing many of the items we attempted to list it, Amazon did not ask for a sell-by date, did not ask us where we got it from. We shipped it to the warehouse. And in the case of the lemon curd from Trader Joe's, we got the package back in the same exact cardboard box we had sent it in with the same tape, the same bubble wrap. And the only thing Amazon did was affix its shipping label on the top.
You also talked to someone who used to be at the fulfillment center who basically backed that up, that they take just about anything at that time, at least. Do you think that your reporting here has led Amazon to look at things for, I mean, do they already have rules about expiration dates and things like that?
So they do have these rules in place, and they have a pretty extensive seller code of conduct online. But what we found that particular individual who was a former Amazon executive said that it's really the consumer who's like left to figure out whether the item, you know, meets their criteria, and they have to report it to Amazon and they can get a return. But in the case of this instance with like the trash, since the sellers are going through these like lengths to make the item pass as new, I'm not really sure what a consumer could do. Mm-hmm. How are you supposed to know where it came from?
Lemon curd from a dumpster. Resold, how much was that for?
We listed it. Actually, I don't remember right off the top of my head. I don't want to give you the wrong number. I think it was $12, but don't quote me on that.
Gosh, $12 or anything. I mean, at that number. I mean, it just seems as if the whole thing is crazy that it worked. But you also talk to people who do this, who go dumpster diving. I think none of them were really okay with telling their names or revealing who they are or what they do. But you talked to them and you interviewed some of those folks.
Yeah, we did. We interviewed several of them, and actually some of them we did get so far as we got their names, and some of them are featured in the story. Some of them also document the whole process on YouTube. So we, along with our article, we have a video, and it shows some of the footage from those YouTube accounts. But we didn't get to a point where we could see, like, the whole dumpster to listing process with the dumpster diver, and we really felt like in order to do this in a thorough way, we wanted to be able to, you know, just see how exactly how easy it is. But in some ways, it sounded really, I mean, absurd, because I cover retail, and I hadn't heard something like this.
No, I hadn't either. And the other question I would want to ask is this stuff passed off as new? Because I know on Amazon you can find used items at half a price or a significant discount. Whenever you're shopping, you have so many options on Amazon that maybe you'd expect if it's under the used category that that's not necessarily going to be new. Or, I mean, you wouldn't think that a jar of food would be opened for sure. But did you notice any discrepancies there? That were things passed off as new, even though they came from maybe sort of a recycled past?
Yeah, so several of the sellers said that they do list the items as new, just simply because I think it's their definition of what's new. Like if it like looks sealed, it's new. So they do that. And actually on Amazon, many of the categories, you can't even list a used product. Like books or electronics, you probably could.
Right.
But like food or makeup or a lot of the other categories, you really only can list items as new. So you are getting, I mean, the items that we listed, we listed them all as new.
Yeah, when I've shopped before on Amazon or anywhere, really, those are sites that, you know, have third-party sellers, it seems as if you look at the comments sometimes and they will tell you, hey, something arrived and it was expired. But there are return policies for things like that, aren't there? Amazon does a pretty good job, would you say? And if you did get something, it's expired or it looks like it's been taped together or something like that, that there is some recourse for you.
Yeah, so Amazon does have a pretty generous return policy. And so if you do spot something wrong with the item, you can go and leave a review or you can complain and then you can get a refund. And we did actually do a pretty deep analysis of reviews on the website to see whether this is a problem. And we did find several reviews where people complained of receiving expired medication, moldy protein bars, expired baby formula. So people are getting these things, and in some cases, when they're able to spot something wrong with the item, they can ask for a return from Amazon.
Khadija, we only have a minute or two left here, but I just wanted to ask you, there's also this separate category, and I would put it in a totally different category, where people are third-party sellers, but they're buying things at thrift stores and wholesalers and discount stores and then marking them up, and have made entire businesses out of this. In fact, you spotlighted one woman in Illinois who's made it her family business to do just that.
Yeah, so you can purchase, she does liquidation sales. And so basically what that is like when a store, including Amazon, gets a return and they don't want to go through it or they feel like they can't sell it, they pile it into this big, huge cardboard box and they just offer it to liquidators. And there's several websites like this that offer liquidation, like bulk.com, Via Trading. There's a whole industry where you can then go online or you can contact the liquidator directly and you can buy that. And so they come kind of piled loose, like just in this huge box. And so what you do is you dig through those boxes and you find things that you can salvage. And it's kind of the same thing where in some sense you have to like kind of look and see whether it looks new enough that you can list it as new. And if it's used, then maybe you offer it on eBay as used. So that also is a way that sellers find items on the cheap and then are able to list them on Amazon and other marketplaces.
Good stuff to know. Khadija Safter had amazing reporting here in the Wall Street Journal. You might be buying trash on Amazon, literally. Check it out. There's also an accompanying video that you did that I thought was very interesting because you show the whole process of how you guys set up a store on Amazon, just as you described, and did the dumpster dives and recycled them and put them online. As you said, bought them right back yourselves. But very interesting stuff. Fascinating reporting, Khadija. Thank you for calling in.
Thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
Have a good day. And the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Wellness Wednesday, live from the Skyline Studios. This is Anna DeVlantis in studio with me. Two very special guests, Andrea Metcalf, AndreaMetcalf.com. She's the owner of Studios Fuse. We know our lover is a health and fitness expert, and also registered dietitian, nutritionist, Dawn Jackson Blattner. You see her everywhere. She's one of the great Chicago dietitians, author of multiple books, including The Superfood Swap. Thank you both for being here. You got it. Hey, before we get on the health and wellness stuff, and there are a number of things, including the most Googled things people Googled about health, which is fascinating, I think. But I want to ask you, we were talking earlier about regifting. Are you regifters? Are you offended when you are regifted or receiving a regift?
First of all, when I heard that on the radio when I was driving over, I was like, I can't believe how honest these people are. I think I have regifted a few things in my lifetime, but the people who got them don't know that. So we're just going to keep that under the table.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I am a closet regifter. I don't want to share it with anyone that I'm doing the regifting.
But so you think they don't know, right?
I feel like
and it's
they
okay
don't
if they
know.
Don't.
Yeah, I feel like they don't know. And they're cool gifts for that person that just weren't cool gifts for me because sometimes that's
right.
The right
that's
match.
The best.
One man's trash is another man's treasure.
That's
you
the
got
best.
It, bam.
When it works out that way, that's the best. I think the only time when it's a fail is if it's something that was clearly intended for them and not you, and they're just like, I don't want this.
Yeah. Or you try to re-gift what they gave you a year ago.
Ooh. Major faux pas.
You have to double check that in your records.
And you have to look at those gift bags because sometimes they have that little tag and it's got
still has it on there. Rip that off.
No, you've got to change gift bags.
Or put from.
Well, I've been guilty of that, though. I'll have the old gift bag even though it is a new gift.
Actually, no, that's true. That is true. I take it back because think about that. That's eco-friendly people. Eco-friendly. So you're not doing a disservice. You're doing an earthly service.
I always re-gift the gift bags.
Okay, fine.
Absolutely.
And let's all sign off
what would
on
you
that.
Do with those? That's
right.
Got to happen. All right.
There you go, John.
Let's get to health and wellness here, which is why you are here. And there's some interesting stuff going on. The top 10 health questions Americans searched on Google in 2019. The first one, the first one is how to lower blood pressure, which I think doesn't really surprise me. One in three adults have high blood pressure. It's a concern when you have it. And there's all kinds of things that you can do with your life to reduce it. Right.
I think that's the good news, right? It's like there's actually very proactive things you can do with your lifestyle. And so me, with my nutrition background, almost every problem, I'm like, you can fix that with nutrition.
That's
you know,
right.
I've got like that
food
one hammer
medicine.
That I hit every nail with. Right. But it really is one of those things. If a client comes in and says they have high blood pressure, I'm like, all right, let's take a look at your diet. Let's look at things like adding beets and adding more fruits and vegetables for potassium, not just taking the sodium away. Because that's what everybody thinks. It's like, oh, high blood pressure. I don't need salt anymore. But it's really taking away the salty six and increasing potassium along with, I'm sure, exercise
helps.
And I always tell people the 10-minute rule, that even 10 minutes of incremental exercise will help you lower your blood pressure. And if you think 10 minutes before or after every time you eat, you'll get that 30 minutes that the American College of Sports Medicine recommends, and you will get that blood pressure coming down quickly.
We want to get to more of that coming up here, because there are a number of studies out that talk about how even the smallest amount of weight loss, the smallest amount, can make major differences in your health. So I want to talk about those studies in a second, but let's stay with this list for a second here. The most searched health issues on Google. What is keto? This diet, the keto diet.
I
go to some of these online sites I go to, and they'll say, here's the keto section. I'm like, oh my gosh, what's the keto section?
Yeah, it's really taken over. So keto diet is a very high fat, moderate protein, and extremely low carb diet. So, basically it can go very wrong for people. Mm-hmm. So if done right, it's a lot of vegetables. It's a lot of good fats like nuts and seeds and avocados and olive oil. And there could be a lot of healthy foods in there, but a lot of people just think keto is like eat a lot of meat. Eat a lot of bacon and cheese and I'm on keto. And it's like, no, you're not.
No, you're not. And there's also it kind of like reflected back to the Atkins diet. And
right.
We knew that such wasn't a great idea, but people did it. And then there's the people that are doing keto for like 6, 12. I've been on keto for 6 months. I'm like,
sorry about that. That was just inserted there in the programming. Andrea, what were you saying?
I was just saying that there's some people who are staying on keto diet for months and months at a time, and it's not healthy, Dawn, right, to be
would
on
you say it's
an extended
well,
period.
So, I mean, here's the deal. There are research studies that will say short amounts of time on a plan that has a lot of vegetables and good plant-based healthy fats with moderate protein can be good for you. But in a year's time, everybody who goes on a diet and tries to eat healthier ends up in the same place, right? They end up healthier even if they are to do a different type of diet. So keto is not the only answer. And in fact, one might say, if you look at a global view of nutrition, right, the healthiest communities out there, like the Mediterraneans, mm-hmm. right, they are eating things like pulses and legumes and beans mm-hmm. and whole grains and all the things that keto do not eat. So
is that the diet you recommend the most? Because I hear it consistently over time when these other diets come and go, and I'm not saying any of them are good or bad. If it works for you, I suppose it works for you. But the Mediterranean one seems to last forever. Like you see, you hear constantly people talking about how that might be a good thing to do.
Yeah, I mean, here's the truth of the matter. There are a million diets out there.
There are so many.
And so how come we know that some vegans are super healthy and some mm-hmm. paleo people are super healthy and some keto people get super healthy? Like, why are all these people doing totally different diets but yet are all getting sort of healthy? What's the commonality between all the diets? Not what makes them all different. What's common about them?
That's interesting.
That's where the magic is. And here's the answer. What's common about all diets that end up being healthy is that they are low in processed food and high in fruits and veggies. Mm-hmm. And so if you do that, whether you decide to skew one way or another with all the other things, at the end of the day, that is really the secret.
And it's I guess it's not a secret. We suppose we all know it. It's just so hard to avoid the processed foods. It is hard to eat the fresh fruits and vegetables constantly. That's a hard thing to aspire to. But it really helps.
Well, I always tell people try and eat 9 to 11 servings, and that blows their mind.
Oh, that blows my mind.
How can I do that? But I say 4-3-2-1, 4 servings at breakfast, which can be your juice or blended into your eggs, 3 at lunch, that's your salads and maybe some extra carrots and vegetables, 2 at dinner and 1 as a snack, and all of a sudden it doesn't seem so overwhelming. You can get that many fruits and vegetables in a day. What do you think?
Well, here's the thing. I do agree.
I know a lot of people couldn't do that. My husband included.
It's challenging. And so usually where I start with people is I say, listen, at a party, you know you're going to probably have a little bit of veggies on a veggie tray. So how about doing an everyday veggie tray where in your house you just keep some vegetables cut with a dip that you like, mm-hmm. and every once in a while you'll pull that tray out and eat a few. And so a lot of times that will start changing their taste buds. It makes them start thinking about vegetables as something to grab. And it sort of gets that momentum going because it can be difficult, especially if you're not in the habit of thinking about them.
Yeah. We're mm-hmm. back with more of Dawn Jackson-Blattner, Andrea Metcalf here on Wellness Wednesdays. A lot more to cover here on WGN. All right. Back with Andrea Metcalf and registered dietitian Dawn Jackson-Blattner. They're health and fitness and wellness, and they know all this stuff. And they, you know, just, it's like, I think we were talking about this during the break. Doing just a little bit better can make a major, major difference. A couple of studies out that show how losing even a few pounds can help type 2 diabetes, just losing a few pounds and losing 10% of your body weight. In fact, 90% of study participants saw they went into almost remission of their diabetes, type 2 diabetes, which is a startling result. But you think about just a small amount of weight loss, just reducing things, just doing a little bit, that's easier to aim for. Those are the kinds of goals that help you get there.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. At the end of the day, it's like I'm a big proponent of you do anything and it gets momentum going. And all of a sudden you start feeling a little bit better and then maybe you'll do a little bit better. But you have to initiate something in order to improve it. So like I'd like to hear what you think about my exercise advice. Oftentimes I have clients who say, I just can't get motivated to exercise. So
I'm one of those people, by the way.
So
I can't get
I
motivated to exercise.
All right, you gotta give me the Andrea Metcalf sign off on this. Okay, so I say, listen, let's take a 7-day challenge. I'm big on 7-day challenges. Okay, so let's do a 7-day challenge of all I want you to do is get your exercise clothes on, go to the place that you're going to exercise, and come home.
Oh, I love
it. I can do that. But then I just talk all the time, and then I'm like, oh my gosh, I don't have any more time. I got to go home.
So then what are you doing? For that 7 days, you're establishing a pattern, and now you have initiated, and now you can improve on that initiation. So then maybe the next week, 7-day challenges, you're going for 5 minutes, which sounds like nothing, but actually like 5 minutes on the treadmill can be exhausting if you've done zero for a while. You know what I mean? So it's like, so what do you think about that?
Is that something you recommend?
I like that idea. well, I like the way that you're putting it into a pattern and giving someone very bite-sized chews of what they're trying to do is and change the pattern, change the habit and get a pattern. And that's what's really key. You know, my rule is always 10 minutes. You can do anything for 10 minutes. So do something for 10 minutes each day. But I'm going to start stealing your 7-day policy. I always said 28 days. And I tell my people, too, when they start working out with me, in 2 weeks, you feel differently. In 6 weeks, the changes start to happen. But nobody will notice for about 12 weeks or 3 months. Like, nobody all of a sudden comes up to you and says, wow, you look differently. It takes a long time to look differently. And you just have to establish how you feel and use that as your motivator to keep going and going.
Yeah, that's the interesting part, because if you don't see the results, sometimes it's pretty easy to just give up on it. You know, you just think, oh, I don't know. Yeah, that didn't work. But then you keep going. What about this whole philosophy now? And I think books have been written about shopping the outer aisles of the grocery store. A lot of people talk about that you just go to the fresh vegetables, you go to that whole outer area, and that's a good way to shop when not a fan.
I give you an on that.
Makes it simple to remember. I think that's why so many people talk about it.
Okay, I'm going to answer two things. One, I say because there's some good things like canned beans that are inside of that, you know, things. And there's some great like multi-seed crackers. And you can find good things if you're a little bit of a, you know, detective in those aisles of the grocery store. Here's what I say instead.
Okay.
Do a cart check.
Cart check. You mean right before you're about to check out.
So right as you're pulling up to that checkout line, you look down and you see, is my grocery cart about 50% produce, about 25% of it coming from whole grains or potatoes, 25% of it coming from things like fish and yogurt and eggs, the protein foods. If you have that in your cart upon checking out, you're going to have the perfect household stocked, right? And I think that's the key. Cart check.
Well, cart check sounds good. You didn't mention anything about the wine. I love my resveratrol
or the Oreos. That goes without saying, my dear.
But you don't toss the Oreos or anything in the wine. You just has to be what percent? What percent are you allowed for that?
Well, here's an interesting thing. It's easier to add a habit than subtract a habit. That is fact. So if you are trying to like not eat junk food, that is a horrible goal. Because that is a negative thing, not eat junk food.
I hadn't thought of it that way.
It would be better to say, okay, whatever garbage is in my cart, leave it. But I'm going to give some competition to this garbage, right? So I'm going to add maybe some berries for a snack and then also have my Oreos. And then over time, the idea is you're adding these good behaviors to crowd out the garbagey behaviors and habits that we have.
See, I agree with you 100%. I always tell people, you know, I'm going to go back to my 9 to 11. I tell them, make three goals. You either go for the 9 to 11 fruits and vegetables, or you really focus on fiber, 25 grams of fiber, or you focus on protein. And focus on one thing, but don't worry about it. Don't get crazy about, oh, how many calories was in this? No, focus on what's in front of you, mm-hmm. and don't go into these little tidbits, and you'll be much better off in your health.
I want to ask you guys about two things, fiber and probiotics. Probiotics seem, there's so many of them, there's so many options out there, and they seem to be things that are on a lot of people's radars.
They're magical now.
Are they magical? I mean, is this something we all need to include?
Well, I mean, gut health, you're onto something there. That is the hottest topic. Talk about what we need to talk about, gut health, right? But I love what you said, Andrea, about sometimes we get into the details and we forget the big picture. So mm-hmm. like the big picture, if you're really looking for digestive health, is are you having enough water and fiber? Like literally, those are the things to start worrying about first. And once you're like, check, I got that, then start having that discussion about, should I be eating some probiotic foods like kefir and yogurt and
sauerkraut
that has not been pasteurized. And so you do that. And then you're like, okay, I love this. Now I'm going to look to supplements, because the word supplement means in addition to. That's the word. The word supplement means
not
in addition to. Right. And so it's like, get your diet basics down pat, and then the supplement can actually work. So then probiotics do become magical.
And what about fish oil? There have been some interesting studies also about that have come out that says that they can be beneficial for certain people, particularly heart issues.
Oh, yes. Anytime
and,
I get somebody.
Brain too.
Oh, yeah. Very, very much so. So, of course, you know, if you're a healthy individual, the first thing, because I'm a dietitian, I'm always like a food first. So, you know, try and get your 2 servings of fish every week, you know, for sure. But then if you have high triglycerides, you have a heart history of yourself or in your family, you're looking for a mind boost. I'm like, a what? A mind boost. you know, doing a supplement of omega-3 after you've gotten your diet in check makes sense to me.
And your whole book is about substituting foods or kind of going healthy up a little bit. Around the holidays, though, do you just allow everybody to say, go for it, just do what you need to do? Or are you still looking for healthy options?
You're right. I lean in. I love the idea of eat what you crave, but do it with better for you foods. I love that all year round. But when you're at one holiday party or two or five or whatever, it's the only rule I have is just use a plate. Don't just mindlessly graze and pick up stuff and shove it in your mouth. Like, could you just put everything you want to eat on a plate? And naturally, you'll enjoy your food more and eat less, even if it's not the healthiest stuff.
Andrea, you had a rule about alcohol so that you don't drink too much at parties, that you go and did water first or something?
Yeah, I always tell people fill up on water. And I tell people go to the party and chew gum or mints, because then you're less likely to want to change that flavor profile in your mouth, or it's in your mouth and you don't know where to stick your gum. So you've got to find a place and walk around to put your gum down.
But
water every time, spritz your wine, or drink your wine and then have the glass of water in between. I know it sounds so silly, but it does make a difference. And the other thing I like too is if you're going to drink spirits, just drink them straight on a lot of ice and keep adding ice, because a lot of times that'll slow you down, unless you really like the taste of bourbon and vodka.
The holiday punch can be deceiving too. You just don't know what's in it. That's the issue. It could be, you know, woo.
Stay away.
Could be going pretty fast with that. We really quickly want to get to the germ experiment in that school.
Did
you see this, where they had the kids go out and play in the dirt and they come back in and they put their hand on a sandwich, then they put it in a plastic bag and they tried to show, after touching different things, whether they washed their hands, didn't wash their hands, whether they touched a Chromebook or a computer or just dirt, and then the growth of the bacteria. Did you see this?
That was so cool. Like I said, I want to do that at the studio and have my clean little piece of bread and then my hand piece of bread that had the washed hands, and then the one that they passed the piece of around to everyone, and then put it in the little baggie, and it got so moldy. It was cool.
Remind people, like,
yeah.
Well, the seriousness.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, we all know that washing your hands is, like, the smart thing, but when you see something like that, it is so disturbing.
The visual.
I told myself, I was like, Dawn, this may actually make you wash your hands a little bit more often.
You got to check it out if it's out there. Andrea Metcalf and Dawn Jackson Blattner, thank you guys so much for being here for Wellness Wednesday. We covered a lot of ground, and thank you for just some reminders as we head into the holidays and beyond. Back here live in the Skyline Studios with Jen Jolly. We usually talk to her on the phone with all her fun ideas for holiday gifts and Cyber Monday and even travel. I mean, you do your research, girl. I love reading all of your columns. I know you're with USA Today, tech lifestyle editor, techish.com. We can find you in a number of places, but you always have such great advice. So thank you for stopping by. What's bringing you to town today?
Oh my gosh, thank you so much for having me. I love Chicago, and every time, it doesn't matter if it's middle of the winter, middle of the summer, every time I come, I'm reminded what a beautiful city this is.
Yeah,
it's
special.
One of my favorite places on the planet, and I'm here to talk about great gadgets. That is my job. My real last name is Jolly.
Everyone
That's
asks
true.
You that.
This time of year, it comes in especially handy. But yeah, my life and my job really revolves around going hands-on with every single gadget that everyone's trying to get you to buy. And I will tell you the God's honest truth, whether it's worth your hard-earned money or not.
I know. That's what I love. I really do like that about you. It seems like you do a ton of research before you suggest a product or suggest anything. I know the travel fairs we had you on for before, and that was remarkable. But what do you have with you today? What are you recommending?
Well, everybody's asking me, first of all, first and foremost, like, what should I get for my kids, my husband, my wife? And there are a ton of options out there. If all you have time to do is run into Target or Best Buy or Walmart and, you know, look around really quickly, I love the OtterPop Symmetry series. These are cases for your smartphone, and then, you know, those little pop sockets, those have been a huge hit this year.
That are on the back of the phone that kind of helps you hold them?
Yeah.
Just like for anything? For
yes.
Selfies or even just so you don't drop your phone?
Yes, exactly. Well, these are interchangeable. So you can grab the case. It's a great case to protect from drops, dips, spills, And then you can customize and give a couple different pop sockets so you have the choices. You can make it really, I'm holding up like you can see what I'm showing you, but you know.
But there are those things that you put on the back of the phone case that helps you hold them, but they're fun now. They have so many decorations on them. My nieces and nephews love them.
Great stocking stuffers. These are not expensive.
How much do they run? Are they $5, $10?
Well, for the case with one of the pop sockets, it's around $50.
With the case.
These are, gosh, I don't know.
The pop sockets are...
Let's see. I'm looking right now. These are about $5 for mm-hmm. each little individual pop socket. So those are great last-minute gifts. Another really, really good one is called the Palm Pact. And these are ones, you know, I just ran into Target and found a bunch of these myself, kind of last minute.
Mm-hmm.
But Palm Pact is a little makeup case. It sticks on the back of your smartphone. And then you have a little compact of makeup on the back of your smartphone. You open
it up,
you've got a mirror. Just great little kind of last minute ideas.
That is fun.
A lot of stocking stuffers. I love the Wyze camera, W-Y-Z-E. It's a
Wyze camera. What's special about that?
It's a home security camera. It can be a security camera. It can stream night vision, 1080p to an app on your smartphone, but it's $20. So that's what I love the most about that one. It's $20. It works. You can talk back and forth to your kids at home. Say, hey, I see you. You're not doing your homework. You better. Or, you know, porch pirates, a huge issue of people stealing packages.
Talk about it all the time.
Here in Chicago, especially. So that's a great way to just keep an eye on that front porch.
So that camera you install, it would be outdoors? Can they go outdoors? Or
this is not an outdoor one, but you can put it at facing a window. You can put it facing out of your door if your door has glass in it. You can put them under an awning or an eave, but this is not the kind that is specifically designed to go outside.
So especially in Chicago when the temperatures get, you know, pretty low, it might not be the right option for outside. But you're right, you can position it inside, and that's a nice way to go. $20.
$20. And then if it sees somebody approaching your front porch and you have it set to do that, you'll get an alert on your phone. You open up the app and you can say, okay, well, that's the mailman coming, or hey, that guy's not supposed to be on my porch right this second.
I've noticed, too, that law enforcement is starting to use all of the different ones in a certain neighborhood. When with people's permission, they have to give them permission, but then they can sort of get to the bottom if there happens to be somebody who's going around stealing packages. They'll have multiple reporting of that and multiple videos. It makes it easier for law enforcement if they want to find somebody.
The Ring devices, you have a whole network. It's like a Nextdoor type app, but all Ring devices. And anytime anything happens within that neighborhood, you can see, you know, who's been casing the neighborhood, who's been breaking into cars. Those are great services. The thing that a lot of people are asking me about those right now, especially with the home security cameras in a baby's room, is how do you lock them down? How do you make sure that your privacy is safe?
It's a great question. We just talked to a cybersecurity expert on this show yesterday, and he said the breach in these recent cases, and there are a number of them that were pretty scary. If anyone saw the 8-year-old talking to a hacker in her bedroom.
So creepy.
I'm Santa Claus, you know, tells her to mess up her room. It's just very creepy. But that particular one, they did get to the bottom of it, and they found that they had used a password that was breached already, and they had used it on multiple devices, multiple, you know, connectivity places where they were, you know, just exactly the same password over and over. And so the hacker was able to get it and then sort of go through all of the devices in their home, and boom, that's how they got in. So it's something to think about with any internet connected device.
A great reminder to get something like LastPass or KeyPass, a password, any kind of password app that will create unique passwords for you. A lot of your devices will do that for you now. Or to change your password, make sure that you change it a little bit, even if you keep it on an Excel spreadsheet. I know this is so, so old-fashioned, but it's less of a chance that somebody will break in and read your Excel spreadsheet that you have glued next to your laptop or next to your desk's device, versus they'll actually hack and get those passwords.
Right.
And passwords, people get a hold of those all the time. So, you know, at once a quarter, once every 3 months, it's a good idea to change them just to be on the extra safe side.
We had Keeper Security in here, a local company that started this, and they do the same thing. They take your passwords and they lock them in a vault for you. There is some charge, monthly charge, but they take everything and organize it for you. So when you go to certain sites or you're using certain devices, they can access, you know, you can access it through, you don't have to remember everything, or do your Excel spreadsheet, I guess, is another option for that, too. What else do you have, Jen, in terms of the holiday gift ideas?
Well, everybody needs an EB, an IBI, one of those EB devices that it's just a little bit larger than a soda can, maybe like kind of half the size of an old-fashioned coffee can. You plug it in, connect it to Wi-Fi, download an app on your smartphone, connect those two up, and then every single time you walk into your house, it will automatically upload all the recent photos and videos. It will also do that from your social media as well. That runs around $130. It is the absolute answer to our problem of taking a bajillion photos and then having them just live on our phone until they aren't there.
And then you forget about them.
Yeah, and then they're just not there.
Yeah, I know.
Those Aura frames, Nix Play frames, those digital photo frames, great last-minute gadgets. They're wonderful. You upload from anywhere in the world, also via an app. Those are wonderful last-minute gifts.
We have some callers and texters asking for that camera you talked about before. Was it Wyze, W-Y-Z-E? It's the Wyze camera, and it sounded like, from what you said, Jen, that it's available Walmart, Target, you know, just about
Home
all
Depot,
the big
Amazon.
Box stores.
Yep.
You can find it for $20.
$20.
Just to go backwards to that. I'm sorry, go ahead. I interrupted you. You said the other thing you were talking about, these photo captures.
Yes, EB, IBI. Another one everybody's been asking me about. I did it on a national news segment, you know, that was maybe 5 seconds long or something. And I've had more texts and emails and social media reach outs about this. It's the Tineco. It's spelled T-I-N-E-C-O, like Tineco, but it's called Tineco. It's the Pure One S12 Smart Cordless Vacuum.
Mm.
It's like a Dyson, except it's different. And so people see it and they think, oh, it's immediately they think of Dyson, the sort of put cordless stick vacuums on the map. But what's special about this one is it uses artificial intelligence to recognize and understand down to half the width of a human hair.
What
exactly you're trying to vacuum up. And it works on any surface. It works on rugs. It works on hardwood floors. It works on linoleum. And it will adjust its suction for that particular amount of dust.
Wow.
So the results are it's really quiet. You know, it doesn't get loud unless you're trying to, you know, suck up a piece of gum that's stuck to your hardwood floor, which I've tried.
Uh-huh.
And it works. I have a dog. It works with dog hair. You have to empty it maybe a little more than some other vacuums, but that's a fabulous device.
How much is that one?
That one runs $600 normally.
So it's a smart vacuum, and that's why you get the price attached.
Yeah, and a lot of really good vacuums. It's meant to last a lifetime, really, and that's kind of the price range. I have seen it marked down as low as the 400s.
Huh.
During the holidays, so you'll want to put in, you know, your Camel smart extension.
Remind
or something
me what
like that
is again. You told me about that when you introduced our listeners to that when we were talking about travel, and I remember thinking that's a really good thing. But what is Camel?
That tracks the price of every product sold on Amazon, and it can send you alerts when they fall to that price point that you want. So, say you want to get that exact vacuum under $400, you can set it. And then it'll send you a notification when it drops to that price.
That is awesome. Then you keep track of the price that you want to spend for it and you don't miss it. Because that's the worst feeling when you're like, oh my gosh, I could have bought it for $400, now it's $600.
And there are some fabulous browser extensions. So that's it's like an app that you download. It lives up at the top of your browser with your reading list or whatever else you have in there. Things like Price Waiter, PriceWaiter.
Price Waiter. Okay.
You can negotiate for the best deal. You can tell a manufacturer, you can tell a seller what you're willing to pay. And this works for big screen TVs, your 4K televisions, your stereo systems, your high-end Bose soundbars.
Wow.
It's the end of the year. People need to get rid of that inventory, especially before CES, the giant consumer electronics show, the first week in January. So they're really pushing out those deals more than I've ever seen. Use one of those. Get a great price.
Price Waiter and Camel, Camel, Camel. Check those out if you want to get deals, because if you have your eye on something, that's a great way to do it. Jen Jolly, always good. Well, it's good to talk to you, but good to see you in person. So Thank you for stopping by WGN. She's a USA Today Tech Life reporter, but also you can see her at techish.com and learn all about Jen Jolly and the things that she researches for us. Thank you, Jen.
Enjoy
Chicago while you're here.
And I have to say, jolly holidays.
Have a jolly. Oh, that's perfect. Isn't that beautiful? Thank you, Jen. WGN coming up. Back here live in the Skyline Studios, Anna DeVlantis along with Steve Bertrand. No Kardashian stories in trending stories today.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
I know that was it was sort of
difficult
a rough trending topics yesterday. We had a lot of girly things.
And Star Wars.
Star Wars, which you don't care about either.
No.
Actually, let's start with the Star Wars. Adam Driver, did you see this? Uh-huh. He walks out of the NPR. He was being interviewed.
Terry Gross.
And isn't it strange because it was all about... She played a clip, right, of him singing. We have that clip, Jasmine? Because I don't know if it was the quality of his singing or just the fact that she played
it. No, he's got this phobia. I am a big Adam Driver fan.
Okay.
Big fan. And I was sending it to my buddies last night. He's got this phobia about hearing or seeing himself perform.
Mm-hmm.
And it's known, apparently, that they tell them. So they were doing this interview, and she said, just so you know, we're about to play the audio of you singing. You can take your headphones off if you don't want to hear it. And apparently he was so upset by that he just left the interview. I don't know if he was remote. Like, she's in Philadelphia, he was in New York.
One of those satellite interviews that you do with the stars.
He just kind of walked away and wouldn't do it. Didn't come back.
Because it's from Marriage Story, that new movie he's
and
part of.
It's a Stephen Sondheim song.
Yeah. And he's singing, and
he's
listened to it.
He's not a bad singer, I don't think.
At first I thought it was just because it was sort of that Pierce Brosnan thing. You remember, did you see her? Pierce Brosnan sing in the Mamma Mia, where it's like, ooh, it wasn't great. But Adam was a good singer. It's just, generally cannot see himself. He's a performer.
He fascinates me, though. I mean, I like everything.
He's incredible.
I love everything he's in. You know, A Marriage Story, I didn't love the movie. I didn't enjoy the movie. But I love watching him, even going back to Girls and everything.
He is incredible. Go see Star Wars, and you still got another Adam Driver thing on your list.
He was in Lincoln.
Was he really?
He was like a clerk.
I saw Lincoln, I don't remember.
It was just a very short...
Small part.
Right.
He is an incredible, incredible actor. Earlier, Steve, I don't know if you heard this, we were talking about this Wall Street Journal article and about how people are dumpster diving and then posting things on Amazon.
So selling it secondhand.
Selling it secondhand.
Right.
They go behind retailers and things like that, and they find merchandise that's been discarded, and then they sort of clean it up, put it on Amazon, and there you go.
There's just a story that breaking today, a Wilmette police investigation where these guys were stealing multi-million dollars worth of cosmetics and things from grocery stores or drugstores. Mm-hmm. And apparently they would have heroin addicts steal them, show up at storefronts, and then they'd get paid like a dime on the dollar for what they stole, and then would resell it. So maybe they resold it like this.
It seems as if, and I know the Wall Street Journal was talking with Amazon about this, because third-party sellers, where's the quality control?
Right.
What kinds of things can you do? And they had no problem. The reporters for this story actually set up a store. They set up a store on Amazon. I think it was $39 a month, and they were able to go dumpster diving. They had talked to some other people who had done this, and they interviewed them for the part of their story. They learned how to do it through them. And then they would post it on Amazon, the Wall Street Journal reporters.
But if it's, dumpster diving is a different way of saying discarded by the vendor, right? I mean, what if they were in cases and,
maybe it's okay.
It could be okay.
Could be okay. I suppose as long as it wasn't sort of, they were really repairing it. It was open trash.
I just recently bought some supplements or medication, call it whatever you want, from Amazon through their suggested retailer.
Uh-huh.
And it was a pack of 48 capsules in the little trays, and six of them were missing.
Oh, wow.
In the box. Yeah.
And you had bought a full box.
I bought a full box, and this was from Amazon Suggest. You know, they have the Amazon mm-hmm. suggested retailer. Like, what's this about that?
Did you complain?
I sent it back.
Yeah,
because
right.
It clearly
had
been opened. And, yeah.
Well, the other thing they pointed out there, too, is that they've spotlighted a woman here in Illinois, and she talked about how she has kind of a legit business she's created out of this. It isn't dumpster diving, but it's going to thrift stores, going to wholesalers, mm-hmm. going to sort of discount stores, finding things she knows, or even shopping like the 50% off racks, finding things she knows can be resold at a higher price, And then she puts it on Amazon. It's a full business for her.
I mean, what's that's
I don't think there's any harm in that. I mean, I really don't.
Although there are some, like if you go to, I know it's in Walgreens too, they'll be tagged saying not for sale anywhere else but Walgreens. Mm-hmm. And that's because I think people have been stealing those things and then reselling them at other smaller stores.
Or you see things that are, you buy them in bulk and it says not for individual sale. So you can't split it up. But maybe that's the reason for that. All right, mother receives $400 worth of toys after her children order online using a smart speaker without her knowledge.
Nice.
I bet that happens. It's so easy. You ever ordered anything on a smart speaker?
Only maybe once or twice.
I'll ask for prices sometimes, but I haven't gone through and done that. But the kids know how to use the smart speakers actually better than the adults in most cases. This woman said she was surprised. She's in Sterling Heights, Michigan. Shocked to find the UPS driver showed up with boxes full of Barbies, PJ Masks toys, and LOL surprise toys at her house. She's like, I didn't order those. I'm like, yes, you did.
So then she just returns them, right?
I think she just returned them. But then she says apparently Amazon does, they keep your preferences. So it's so easy. They make recommendations when you start, even as a small kid.
Right,
right. Start saying you want to order something. Well, would you like to repurchase your LOL dolls?
How about a Ken doll? Right.
How many would you like? 100.
You ordered 12 last time.
And that's how it goes. All right, the story about Biden. Joe Biden is out. If you're wondering if Joe Biden is healthy enough to be president, his doctor has released a 3-page report explaining he is in, quote, healthy, vigorous, or he is a healthy, vigorous 77-year-old. Biden, known for challenging people to push-up contests and wrestling matches to demonstrate his physical vigor. And here it is, his 3-page note from the doctor that he's okay.
So what Donald Trump's doctor said he was the...
Astonishingly excellent. Remember that?
Right.
That was a 1-page. It might have been a 1-paragraph. But
that one says he's a vigorous 77-year-old?
Vigorous 77-year-old is a 77-year-old male.
You could read that as saying he's very vigorous for being 77.
Yeah. Fully capable of taking on the role of president. So in case you were asking. But actually, they go through his blood pressure and other things like that. And it looks good for Joe Biden. So there you go with that. Now we want to get to the top, well, the worst. So the bottom, the worst holiday songs of all time. You have any guesses on this or what you don't like?
Anything by the Chipmunks.
Me too. That's the worst. That's the
terrible.
Worst. For some reason, when you're a kid, those sound great. And then after that, I can't stand it. But here's number, this is on the list as we count down. We've got this one right here by Aqua. It's called Spin Me a Christmas. Have you heard that? And I bet you like to see,
gonna spin you a Christmas. No.
These people are from the Barbie girl in the Barbie world kind of thing. Then there's the William Hung, remember him from the 2004 American Idol contestant?
He's an automatic.
He was so bad, he was kind of good. But he did the Little Drummer Boy. Were you aware of this?
That's a bad song, too. That's one I'd put on my list.
One, yeah, generally. All right.
Enough.
Twisted Sister. We like Dee Snider. He's a fan of WGN.
He comes
by and visits us.
Yeah.
Here's his heavy metal Christmas. Okay. I see why that's on the list. We got Justin Bieber making it with Mistletoe.
Yeah.
All right, that's part of his holiday album. That's on the list. Worst holiday songs. Jeff Foxworthy, you're familiar with the Redneck 12 Days of Christmas?
Sure. No, I don't know the Redneck.
Mm-hmm. Cool taste.
In a Copenhagen, 9 years probation, 8 table dancers, 7 packs of Redmen, 6 dancers.
This one I'm surprised by. Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer. I like that song. I mean, I don't want to overhear it, but I like it.
Well, it's too late. Every time you hear it, now you've overheard it, don't you think? But
I think the first time you hear it this season.
I liked it. I mean, I remember I was in college when that came out.
Yeah, I thought it was so cute.
Walking home from our house Christmas Eve.
It's supposed to be kitschy, right? I don't know about that one. All right, John Denver, Please Daddy, Don't Get Drunk This Christmas. And finally, number one is exactly what you said, Steve Bertrand. Anything from the Chipmunks holiday album. It's so true.
This is maybe a funny idea for 10 minutes in the 60s, right? Did this probably come out in the 60s?
Yeah, that might be right.
Right.
It's just...
Because they had the technology to do it.
They did it, and they could do it, and we're done with it. All right, that wraps up.
They've had their movies, haven't they?
They have, and yeah. I have not seen them.
No.
But do they play the holiday songs in the movies?
Sure.
Yeah. Maybe they built that around that. That wraps up Trending Topics. We're going to be back with more, and the news is coming up with the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.